Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, March 28th. I'm Ray Graff. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and state lawmakers plan to spend the rest of the week working out a state budget that's due on Friday. A number of issues are in discussion, including an extension of a millionaire's tax, tuition aid for middle-class college students, and justice reform. Meanwhile, New York is keeping a wary eye on the Trump administration to see how federal funding changes could impact the state. Here to discuss these issues and more are Blair Horner of the New York Public Interest Research Group and Bill Hammond from the Empire Center, and we would like to hear from you. The number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or you can email the program voxpop@wamc.org. Your calls and your emails, Blair Horner and Bill Hammond, coming up after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in is the way the professionals say it. Talk show, I'm Ray Graff. New York state lawmakers are facing a Friday budget deadline with a number of issues hanging over their heads. Among them are an extension of a millionaire's tax, tuition aid for college students, an expansion of ride-hailing services upstate, and justice reform. Meanwhile, Governor Cuomo has floated the idea of an extender budget that would maintain current funding levels. The Democrat says New York is facing uncertainty about what the state can expect from federal funding sources. Here to discuss all that and much more, Blair Horner. We know Blair. He's on these airwaves at least once every few moments on this radio station. And Bill Hammond. And Bill is the health policy director for the Empire Center. Blair is the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group. We welcome your calls. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, or you can email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Bill and Blair, welcome to the show.
Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for having me. And we'll see you enough, Ray.
Tepid enthusiasm out of both of you, all right? We'll see if we can ratchet up the energy level. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says state leaders could delay high-profile budget ideas such as free college tuition for middle-class students because of uncertainty in Washington. The Democrat was on New York One TV last night and said the possibility of deep cuts in federal funding could cause significant disruption to the state. He says one option for lawmakers now negotiating a state budget is a simple extension of current spending levels. Lawmakers and the governor hope to approve a state budget before Saturday. It's April 1st, right?
That's right, appropriately.
Very nice. April Fool's Day, right. A simple extension of the current year budget would be a big disappointment for the governor, who had proposed several new initiatives, including free state college tuition for middle-class students, expanded child care tax credits, and a big boost in public education spending. Well, before we get into the nitty-gritty, what is the latest? Are they going to get a deal done by Saturday morning, Blair?
Well, I mean, you never know. It's Tuesday, so you never really know for sure. The Albany roller coaster continues to go up and down.
Yep.
But my sense would be is that just if history's any guide, the governor wants to get the budget on time. This is one of the metrics by which he measures his success as governor. I think the legislature wants to get it done. And when he was rattling the saber on New York One last night, it was really because he has tremendous constitutional powers in terms of how the budget is negotiated and what happens with the budget. And without getting too much into the details, he was rattling that saber. My sense would be, if you forced me to bet right now, that they would get done either close to or on time.
So you say this to some extent is some brinksmanship, political brinksmanship. But is it not perhaps a prudent idea to see what shakes out from the federal standpoint? Blair,
well,
Bill.
The timing of this is very interesting and potentially revealing, because he wasn't talking about it when Donald Trump was elected. He wasn't talking about it when Donald Trump took office. He wasn't talking about it while they were considering a House GOP health plan that would have cut billions of dollars from the state budget. He's talking about it now in the last week of negotiations. Am I not on?
No, you're on. Okay. No. I was turning myself off. I thought you were going to go a while.
No, but why Friday the House GOP failed to pass its health plan? So suddenly all those cuts to Medicaid are off the table, at least for the time being. So why this week is there an urgency about preparing for disaster from Washington? I think it's because he's coming down to the wire in his negotiations with the legislature. They're trying to He's proposed increases in spending. They're trying to add significantly more money on top of his increases, and he's trying to draw a line with them. He's playing hardball.
Yeah, that seems right. I mean, that seems about. Bill's right about the sort of the history behind this thing. The governor proposed the budget, actually, didn't talk too much about it in January, and so here it is at the last minute. Every executive wants to spend less money than every legislative branch. Every legislative branch wants to add money. This year, the dynamic is even particularly more difficult because the governor killed lawmakers' pay raise in December. And so I think both leaders of both houses are looking to make the members a little happier. Usually that means more money. And so the governor is sort of putting the kibosh on that by saying that given the circumstances at the federal level, that this uncertainty means that he has to hold the line on spending.
The Empire Center, Bill, your place, looked into this federal block granting, which has now been at least temporarily put on hold from the Trump administration. And so what did you learn when you guys were looking at that?
Well, what they were planning to do, there were three or four ways in which that health bill would have affected New York. First of all, it would have rolled back the Medicaid expansion money that we were getting to the tune of several billion dollars. But that wouldn't have gone away until beginning in 2020. Mm. So it didn't affect this fiscal year. They were also talking about pulling back the money for the Essential Plan, which is kind of an extension of Medicaid that's a very low-cost health plan for low-income people. That would have cost us billions more, but again, that was going to happen in 2020. And then going forward, they were going to limit the growth of federal aid to the medical inflation rate. I didn't think that was going to make that much of a difference, but it could have, over time, it could have constrained us. But again, that was all in kind of the future years, 2020 and beyond.
And the block grants affect all the states. I mean, it affects New York differently because we're sort of set up differently. But the states of Massachusetts, Connecticut, anybody which uses the Medicaid program aggressively could face potential cuts depending on how they designed it.
But then there was that famous the Collins-Faso Amendment, a last-minute thing that cropped up. Right. That was just about New York. It didn't affect any other state. It was requiring the state government to take over the share of costs that
from
are currently
counties.
Borne by counties in New York City. That it was interesting to see the governor's opposition went up several notches when that proposal came out. He was opposed, but his opposition was relatively muted until that proposal came out. And understandably for him, it was going to throw a $2.3 billion monkey wrench into his budget.
Which ultimately will come out of the taxpayer's pocket either way, right?
Right. It would have been shifting from the county tax base to the state tax base, or who knows exactly how that would have played out. But it was that really sent him into kind of a flurry of press releases, press conferences, meetings with health industry officials, some pretty strong language directed at the two sponsors of it, Chris Collins and John Faso. And then ultimately the bill didn't even get a vote in the House.
So. Although there is talk that they may separate this out and try to get that through as a one-off.
Just the Collins-Faso amendment?
Yeah.
Well, that would, I'm sure, set the governor off again.
You mentioned, and we'll get to the phones in a minute, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, Blair Horner, Bill Hammond here. You mentioned the medical inflation rate.
Yeah.
How does one calculate the medical inflation rate?
Oh, that's the...
That include insurance?
Something the Labor Department does, I believe. It's a branch of the Consumer Product Index.
So that's the cost of health care?
Price Index.
CPI. It's based on sort of on the global level how much the country spends on medical care and how much that grows from year to year.
Yeah, so it's the services provided
in healthcare.
It's
sort of like you when you hear people talk about the inflation rate, that's the consumer price index. This is a kind of a subset of the consumer price index for medical care.
Our number once again is 800-348-2551. Let's take a call or two before the first break. Let's go to Mark in West Hurley. Mark, you're on.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good.
Are any of you familiar with the Be Fair to Direct Care movement that's going on right now?
Yes.
Be Fair to Direct Care.
Yes.
Bill Hammond.
Yes. What that's about is...
Would you like me to explain it to everybody?
Well, no, Bill is going to explain it to everybody.
Let me take a crack at it anyway. The governor, in a previous year's budget, was it just last year that they did the minimum wage?
Yes.
Yeah, so they ramped up the minimum wage across the state. In some parts of the state, it's going to go up to $15 an hour over the next few years.
Not upstate, though.
Correct, not upstate.
And in 2021, not right away.
Well, it's already moved up the first notch to 11.
It depends on what part of the state. They've already bifurcated it.
It's a very complicated thing. There's different classes
of upstate. Right.
Different classes of businesses, different regions, and then there's a stepwise scale. But at any rate, the minimum wage went up. Suffice it to say, the minimum wage went up, and that triggered a kind of a cascade effect because a lot of people in a lot of industries that are funded by state government were making less than the current minimum wage, or they were making close to the current minimum wage. And so the employers of these very low-paid service workers came to the state and said, you're costing us money by raising the minimum wage. Please give us more money in the state budget. And the state did that for a number of industries, especially in the healthcare area. But there were certain providers, nonprofit organizations that provide care to the disabled in particular, who have very low-paid workers, and they didn't get that extra money from the state. And they have, understandably, I think, they've stood up and said, you can't cut us out. If you don't give us money to finance the impact on our workers of the minimum wage increase, to finance raises for our workers, we're going to go out of business. We're going to be bankrupt. And the governor today, I think, said he's going to address that with $55 million. I don't know whether that's adequate to meet the whole need. But I think there is a consensus that these are deserving organizations. They're doing, God's work, right? They're taking care of the disabled people. And they are utterly dependent on the state for their funding. And so when their wages go up, the state, something has to give. The state has to finance.
Let's take a break here. Bill Hammond is with the Empire Center, Blair Horner with New York Public Interest Research Group. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Colby Attorney Service, corporate formations, document retrieval services, court filings, and legal publishing for the legal and professional community. Since 1939, ColbyService.com. The Whistling Kettle of Boston Spa and Troy. Seasonal teas for wellness, providing nutcracker, winter spice, butterscotch warming teas, savory and sweet baked goods available, thewhistlingkettle.com. J. Rich Clothing, Northampton, Massachusetts. Fashion forward menswear by Theory, Patrick Assaraf, Robert Graham and Diesel, Main Street, Northampton, jrichclothing.com and Instagram. Clipcentric Albany, a local video services division of Clipcentric, producing video advertisements for businesses throughout the capital region for web, mobile, and TV, albany.clipcentric.com. College Street Motors, Amherst, Massachusetts, for over 30 years specializing in foreign and domestic car and truck repair and 24-hour towing. Full-service gas includes checking of fluids, tire pressure, and window washing. CollegeStreetMotors.com. And Edgar Bosick, Certified Financial Planner, Private Financial Design, South Hadley. Your life, your plan, your portfolio. PrivateFinancialDesign.com. Securities through Cambridge Investment Research, Member FINRA, and SIPC.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, 800-348-2551. The number. We're joined by Blair Horner and Bill Hammond today. The New York State lawmaker is presumably hard at work at this moment. Governor Cuomo and lawmakers hope to have a budget deal in place by midnight Friday night. Blair seems to think it'll be close.
Yeah.
After all those years of late budgets, you think this one will be fairly on time?
This is, it's 7 years in a row now
that
the governor has been doing this. And so I think this is a big deal for him and the legislature.
But have
frankly.
They been good budgets in your estimation?
Well, it depends on how you view it, right? Every budget
is
either
good. Well, how does Blair view it?
It depends on the issue. Some of the issues, I like what happens in the budget. Some of the things in the budget, I hate what happens in the budget. And it doesn't seem to matter whether or not they do them early, late, or in between.
Some of the questions out there, one that hangs on everyone's lips, although I don't know if we all know exactly what it means, is the millionaire's tax.
Right.
And what's the fate to be of that one?
It seems to me, sort of following up on what Bill was talking about before, if you really believe that the state faces potential threats, financial threats down the road from cuts from the Trump administration, which is seemingly a reasonable thing to expect, I don't know how the governor and the legislative leaders necessarily give away the revenue. So there's revenue that's based on tax rates that were set a few years ago. That law expires this year. If they don't extend it, it costs the state in revenues. Now, the counter argument, of course, against that is those tax rates may have a drag and impact, a smothering effect on economic activity, or people may be leaving as a result of that, and that's what they're going to have to figure out. But it is revenue on the table, and I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure to sort of come to an agreement on
now,
that.
Now, as I understand it, the proposed bracket would affect those who make more than $100 million a year, which to me is monopoly money.
I think you're talking about an assembly proposal.
That's right.
See, Hastie's proposal,
right. There's a law that expires, and then there's an assembly proposal to sort of expand on that.
Yeah.
So there's both things that are happening. Go ahead.
I mean, the part that is an existing law that's about to expire affects everyone from a million up, essentially, in income.
So nobody in this room. Except Blair, obviously.
That's right.
But something to think about with respect to that. First of all, as my Empire Center colleague E.J. McMahon has pointed out, that tax would bring in more money than the governor himself in his forecasts needs to prevent a deficit. His budget office forecasts out how much he's going to need to spend in the future years. There is a deficit in the coming year, and there's a deficit in the year after that. But then down the road, the deficits get smaller, and some of this tax revenue would theoretically be more than he needs.
Based on what projection is the deficit getting smaller? We saw the other day population leaving, people voting with their feet, as they say. How are you basing this, that the deficit is going to be reduced? Have we seen spending cuts going down?
Is based on the governor's budget office's own projections of how state spending. It doesn't necessarily take into account unforeseen actions in Washington. So
right. this is a sort of a plain vanilla economic forecast based on reasonable assumptions of what should happen over time. Of course, they may not be right.
Assumptions tend to be
sometimes people get
them wrong. Assume.
Indeed. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Bill Hammond of the Empire Center, Blair Horner of NYPIRG, and let's go to the phones. Doris in Argyle. Doris, you're on.
Hi. I only caught part of the conversation about people who work with people with disabilities, but I want to support whatever you said about increasing the wages for those staff people. My husband and I have two adult disabled sons who live in a group home in Schoharie County. We don't have other children that will be able to support them after we're dead and gone. We are saving as much money as we can to leave on their behalf, but they will be dependent on the system and on Medicaid and on those staff people who work with them every day and look out for them and take care of them. And Medicaid is being threatened now at the federal level, and we're losing sleep at night about what's going to happen to our two sons after we're gone. So I just want to say I support anything that you guys were saying about helping the workers that help the disabled people.
Doris, thank you very much for that. Our number is 800-348-2551. Bill Hammond is here. Blair Horner is here. And Samantha in Kingston is on. Samantha.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I understand there's an item in the budget that would require online retailers to start collecting sales tax the same way that your typical brick and mortar store does at present. I'm just wondering, can you sort of elaborate on that? And is it gaining any traction? You know, is it popular or unpopular?
Well, the editorial that came out today on the Syracuse.com website was certainly would indicate that it's not very popular. Blair, what do you know about this?
Well, it's not one of the issues I'm following. The tax, I mean, the call is right. The tax, as I understand it, is trying to track what happens with brick and mortar institutions now. Right now, you're supposed to pay a tax, but I believe it's the purchaser who does that. It's not necessarily Amazon that has to that collects it.
Right, but this is loosely called the Amazon tax. But Amazon's been collecting tax in New York State for a number of years.
This is focused on a sort of a narrow category of purchases. When someone in New York uses Amazon to buy something from a business in another state.
A third-party business.
Not Amazon.
Right.
A third-party business. And technically, the person who buys that thing owes the tax, regardless of where they buy it or who they buy it through.
And whether that third-party collects it or not.
The question is, should Amazon have to collect it on behalf of the state and on behalf
That's
of
right.
that? And it's not super popular because there are businesses in New York who use Amazon to buy stuff from other states and would probably prefer not to have to pay sales tax. Even
well, and it would be a pain in the neck for Amazon to be the sort of the collector of taxes for the state of New York.
Yeah, I just don't know why the state legislature would care about whether it's a pain in the neck for Amazon.
Well, again, my guess is that at least part of the argument is going to be that there are the businesses within the state of New York that do have to collect the tax right now that are not purchasing through Amazon, who feel like they're at a competitive disadvantage to a company that is.
And I'm the owner of one of those businesses. The idea that someone could sell the exact same product that I sell, but automatically offer their customers an 8% discount off the MSRP definitely puts brick and mortar businesses at a significant disadvantage, and it has for years. And I say either everyone collects it or no one collects it. I would love to just stop collecting it, you know.
So you're in favor of this this tax, Samantha?
It's not that I'm in favor for, because I have friends who, you know, sell antiques and do a lot of online retailing. It's not that I want to make their lives more difficult. It's just that I think that you need to treat everyone the same way. I mean, if you're going to have one whole segment of the retail industry who's skirting this, and, you know, not to mention, you know, what it's doing to revenues for communities, you know, they're really missing out on a lot of tax revenues. So there has to be, and then, you know, businesses like mine and, you know, the other brick and mortar stores, they're going to suffer as a result. And, you know, downtowns are already, you know, struggling. So, but I think that these downtown regions are important. And I think that anything that the legislature can do to support that is good. So I would say either no one collects it, which I'm all for, or somehow you need to level the playing field and stop giving an unfair advantage to one type of business over another.
Bill Hammond.
Well, I'm guessing that there's another consequence to this, and that is if Amazon finds itself collecting tax on behalf of New York, you know, from businesses in, say, Illinois.
Right.
Illinois is going to say, well, you should be collecting from New York on behalf of people in Illinois.
And the upshot is prices go up for everybody.
So businesses in New York might get caught up in this. In other words, they'd have, when there's, if you're a small, say you're an antique dealer or a craftsperson, and you're marketing your stuff through Amazon all over the country, suddenly you would find yourself collecting sales tax. Amazon would be collecting sales tax on your sales to other states. So that's, I mean, I think if you're going to have a sales tax and it doesn't make sense to only collect it from some businesses, especially as large quantities of retail activity go online.
And the caller's right. I mean, the sales tax in New York gets split between state and local government, right? So the local governments also take a hit on this. But it is a, you know, it's a controversial thing. The industry, I'm sure, is gearing up with its armies of lobbyists to block it because they don't want to be in the middle of being the tax collector for the state of New York. The difficulties, I think, from the caller's perspective, the difficulties is to pass a new tax in the state of New York is a difficult thing to pull off. I don't know how well the brick and mortar side of the equation in terms is organized in terms of having their own lobbyists and all that kind of stuff to make it happen.
It strikes me, and I think this would affect eBay too. It's any business pulling in over $100 million. How the heck are you going to do that on eBay when every Tom, Dick, and Harry is selling his own stuff on eBay?
Well, I mean, the difficulty.
How would eBay do that?
Well, the difficulty with the online issue. I mean, well, the eBay would know that the purchaser is from the state of New York. They would increase the price, presumably, because they know this, that they're from New York, of 7 or 8%, depending where the person's from. And they would just tack it on and collect the tax themselves and send it to the state of New York. I mean, the caller, in a sense, has to do that now at her cash register because she has to collect the tax and then ship it to the state of New York.
Either way, you're going to get it. That's the way.
The consumer does. Yeah. They pay higher prices either in terms of online purchases. But the caller makes a very compelling argument, which is if you're going to have brick and mortar collecting the tax, why shouldn't the online guys?
This reminds me of something I learned as a young reporter going back into the 1990s, and that is we call it the sales tax, but technically it's the sales and use tax, and so that's a reference to the fact that if you decide to buy a car, and you know you're going to owe sales tax on the car. And so you go to another state with a lower sales tax and buy your car there, and you think, oh, I've saved money.
Sure.
Technically, you owe the state of New York the difference in the sales tax that you paid in Vermont versus what you owe in New York. So you're supposed to, when you get back home, you're supposed to write a check to the state. And in fact, I think with things like cars, because of the registration process, they have a way of catching you on that.
Because we need the money.
There was a time when the state tax department was going to like marinas and writing down the registrations of yachts because a yacht can cost millions of dollars, and if somebody was evading the sales tax on the yacht, they were going to get catching.
Well, I'm going to leave my commentary to the side here. Well, another.
It's a good thing you didn't buy your yacht outside of the
state. Yeah, I own
New York.
Mansion on the yacht. Yeah, that's
or
they
go to parking lots in major shopping centers in New Jersey and
look
for
look
New
for
York
the
license
New York plates.
Well, another issue that I know that you have opined about recently is the raise the age.
Since you're pointing at me, you would think that am I the one that opined
that's
on
you,
raise
Blair.
The age?
Like, right. Like the McLaughlin Group.
Right.
More tone.
No, this is not television, though. Nobody knows.
Well, actually, people can watch it, and they can see you nodding off. You can go to WAMC.org
the
and watch Blair asleep.
I have not opined on Raise the Age. It's not one of the issues that I work on, but if we'd like, we could sort of make the best of it, Bill and I. The killer bees, we could sort of make the best of it.
I thought you did a commentary on that.
No.
I usually put your commentary on the web.
It could have been that you sleep through them when you actually see it and hear it. And
so
maybe that's it.
We make a practice every year of raising our own ages.
I know.
Thank God, knock on wood.
So the proposal is to change the criminal justice rules to treat 16 and 17-year-olds as juveniles, not adults. I guess New York, only one of two states that still treat 16
and 17-year-olds. And that seems to be one of the big hang-up issues, I think, in the budget negotiations. It's really, in a sense, has a non-budget impact, and yet presumably would be popular with the advocates. And so it's very deeply enmeshed into the budget negotiations and would be, if they put a budget together on time, which I think everybody hopes they do, might be one of the issues that actually gets caught up in that negotiation.
Can I weigh in here with an editorial comment?
Oh, please do. We have nothing but time.
I'm perfectly willing to support the concept of raise the age. It has no business being part of the budget.
Well, that would seem to be common sense.
It has budget impacts. It affects, the spending, the underaged criminals would be handled differently.
That's right. They'd be in family court instead of criminal court, and so that could have a budget impact.
But it's not, fundamentally, it's not a question of spending or taxing. It's a question of how we enforce criminal laws. It should be a standalone bill.
So why, this is common practice, you lump stuff into a budget bill. Well, why do that? It would seem to me that it has enough legs to stand on its own.
Well, it may not. It may not. It may not in one of the houses where you're asking people who want to be tough on crime and not treat juveniles as younger juveniles, and they want to treat them as adults. They don't want to take the vote. If it's part of the budget, then technically, depending how they do this, which we don't even know, they're voting on a budget bill. They're not voting on a specific narrow question. I think Bill's right. But the governor has maximum leverage in the budget process, and he uses it often for non-budget items.
Yeah, so it could work both ways. If you feel like one party to the budget, say in this case, I'm stereotyping a little bit, but if you think that the Law and Order House is the state Senate, which is run by Republicans, they're going to be less inclined to raise the age. You put it in the budget because there's other things in the budget that they want, and so you can do a deal. By the same token, if you think the Assembly is going to be more in favor of it, you can extract things from the Assembly by putting it in the budget. You can get them to go along with things they don't want to do because they're so interested in seeing raise the age happen. But that's, to me, that's not, I understand that there's a role for horse trading in politics, but Albany takes it way too far. And there's enough going on in this budget. There's, you know, $150-odd billion. There's taxes. There's questions about how healthcare is run. There's questions about how public education is run that are truly budget issues. And then to kind of crowd it with non-budget things, that annoys me.
Wow.
Well, harsh words.
I know. Bill's a tough.
You said it was in such a nice way.
I used to be a columnist.
You know, I think we really have to calm down after that. So let's take a break. 800, everybody just calm down. Take a deep breath, Bill Hammond. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from New England Hydroponics, the indoor gardening experts. Offering a full selection of hydroponics, organic soils, and indoor gardening equipment, Southampton and Framingham, Massachusetts. Online at nehydro.com. Coldham and Hartman Architects, serving residential and institutional clients with architecture designed for resilience and renewability. Designed for the next 100 years, cnharchitects.com. Colby Attorney Service, document filing, document and information retrieval, and other services including legal publishing and corporate record searches, colbyservice.com. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. The Discovery Center, presenting April programs featuring guided discovery hikes and exploration into the worlds of the American woodcock and pond life, albanypinebush.org. And the Black Sheep, downtown Amherst, a New York-style delicatessen and European-style all-butter-scratch bakery, caterer, and cafe offering fair trade coffee, blacksheepdeli.com.
Well, I think Bill Hammond, he may have had an aneurysm, but I think he's fine now. He really got worked up there in the last segment. Our number is 800-348-2551. And Blair Horner, who is always cool, man. He's like Dean Martin sitting over there.
That's right. I have my martini.
That's right. Well, we usually do that around this time on Vox Pop. Ray Graff here. Our number is 800-348-2551. Back to the phones we go, and it's Michael in Schenectady. How you doing, Michael?
I'm doing well. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I wanted to talk about the state mandated programs that the counties are funded. Cuomo spoke about, you know, reducing the burden on income taxpayers for property tax and for school tax. And it seems the only real way to do that is to eliminate some of these mandated county-funded programs that the state runs. Have you guys heard anything about that? And do you believe that the governor was sincere when he said that he was looking to help out the middle-income families that are burdened with extraordinary taxes?
Well, I think this, in a sense, is two related issues. Bill raised one earlier, which is the burden on Medicaid, which the local governments pick up. And as Bill mentioned earlier, there's an effort at the federal level to sort of shift the cost of paying for Medicaid from local governments to the state. From a county perspective, that's a big number in terms of the amount of money they have to pay. The governor's also talking about pushing to consolidate local governments under the theory that through consolidation you would have some economies of scale in terms of how local governments purchase services or whatever they're doing, and thus save money. It doesn't seem like either one of those are in the mix in any meaningful way. Bill, I don't know if you've heard anything any different on that.
No, the proposal for the state to take over Medicaid died with the House Republican health plan. The talk about consolidation, that runs into
it's an annual conversation that doesn't seem to really have as yet bear any fruit.
I should say, though, that as much as the governor railed against that Collins Faso amendment, he actually he should get some credit for what he did do on this issue, which is he froze how much the counties have to pay. It used to be that the county share grew at the same amount that Medicaid did, which was fast. And then Pataki slowed it down to 3% a year, and then Cuomo slowed it down to 0%.
But how is that tenable over a long period of time?
Well, so for example, if your county's cost is $100 million and it's half of your property taxes, it's going to stay exactly to $100 million. And so over time, your property tax revenue will go up slowly. Right, so your sales tax revenue will go up slowly. And Medicaid will become a smaller and smaller part of your budget. Now, counties may feel that it's becoming smaller, not fast enough. You know, like it's still a big expense in their budget.
So the state's share of what it's paying in Medicaid has gone up as a result of the governor's action. So it's roughly half of the spending on Medicaid gets paid by the feds. Roughly half gets paid by state and local. The percentage that the state is picking up has gone up over time because of the action of the governor. And the percentage being paid by local governments has gone down over time because of basically inflation.
Speaking of taxes, what is the fate likely to be of the governor's bold and much ballyhooed plan to provide free tuition to SUNY and CUNY?
Well, the governor's proposal, just so your listeners know, is that any family, it gets phased in over time, but any family in the first year whose income, adjusted income, is $100,000 or less would receive a scholarship called the Excelsior Scholarship. That would be cover the cost of attending a public college. It has no impact on private colleges or independent colleges.
Just the tuition part.
Just tuition, not room and board, not books. There's some technical issues that you have to take at least 15 credits in a year. The governor's people now say 15 credits in a semester. The governor's people are saying now that it's 30 credits in a year, so you could technically take some in the summer. Maintain sort of good academic standing, and that you would get reimbursed at the end of the semester for the cost of your tuition. So it's not like a tuition assistance program. It's not really a grant. They call it a scholarship for a reason, and it's based to some extent on performance.
That's snake oil, then. If you have to pay,
Well, the schools would say, we're not going to charge you. You're on the scholarship program. Let's see how you do. But if at the end of the semester you don't maintain that, for some reason you drop a class, let's say you get mononucleosis or something, you can only take three classes instead of four or five, you owe the school the money. You don't get it from the state. So It's a little more complicated proposal advanced by the governor than pure you just go for free. Right now, the poorest college students already go to SUNY, the State University of New York, for free under the state's tuition assistance program. This really benefits families of incomes of between $50,000 and $100,000.
But who pays?
Well, the taxpayers.
Okay, so the conservatives would say, well, old ladies and people with no children in school are going to end up footing the bill for this.
So the same argument can be made for K-12, right? I mean, the governor's argument is that this, you know, that we're in the 21st century and that it's important for the state to do everything they can to make sure that college is affordable even to middle-income families. The ironic twist in the whole thing, of course, is the governor's larger higher education budget doesn't include any additional money for the state of New York, State University of New York. And so if there are more students going to the school next year because tuition is free, I don't know what happens. I don't know how the services being maintained at the current level can handle the additional surge of students.
So there are a couple three things I want to bring up here.
All right.
First,
stay
is
calm.
The way this is targeted, as he said, we already have aid programs that make public college essentially, the tuition part of it, essentially free for lower-income kids. The issues that lower-income kids have are the non-tuition expenses, housing, books,
books are not cheap, by the way.
Which can be half or more of your total cost. This does not address that for any group, low-income, high-income, middle-income. So the benefit of this would go primarily to middle to upper middle class families. Issue two, This just covers the list price tuition, the amount. But when SUNY educates a kid, tuition's only covering, what, like a third of the cost, like that? The state is paying the other two-thirds. And if the state doesn't increase its aid, then the tuition money doesn't really pay for that kid's education, if you follow me. Then the third issue that's come up pretty vociferously from the private colleges is, you're going to be stealing our students. You're targeting the middle and upper income kids who are going to places like Siena and St. Rose, who, when they hear the word free, when they hear I can go to SUNY for free, they're going to say, well, they're going to drop their application to Siena or St. Rose and switch to SUNY. And they're terrified of that possibility. They're putting out numbers where they attempt to estimate how many students they're going to lose, that's how right. many dollars they're going to lose, how many jobs they'll have to lay off. And I don't think you can laugh those numbers off, because a lot of local private colleges are under pretty severe strain.
We have to get back to the phones here for a moment, but have either one of you, or specifically maybe Bill at the Empire Center, have you run any numbers of what the tax hit will actually be if this goes through?
Which tax hit? The SUNY thing?
On the taxpayers.
Well, the governor's estimating $163 million is what I think they've been estimating that the cost of this will be. So that's the only number that I've seen.
Except that it may have, as I was saying, it may trigger a need for more state spending
right.
through the budget as opposed to these scholarships.
Let's go to Brittany in Boston Spa. Brittany, you're on.
Hi. My question was about the raise the age issue. In that budget, were they counting – like the amount it costs to incarcerate the criminals, or were they counting the like future costs? You know, if they rehabilitate instead, it'll prevent future incarceration.
I don't know the answer to that one. Anybody?
No, I assume since they're just looking at a one-year budget that they would be looking at whatever cost differential there is for the judicial process and potential incarceration of a 16 and 17-year-old. I don't think they're looking down the road.
Bill?
There could be some savings if you're talking about keeping younger kids out of prison. Prison's very expensive. But the big fight there
on raise the age is, you know, for the certain violent crimes, they're not saying that 16 and 17 year olds would be exempt from adult
right.
incarceration. And so it's not entirely clear. Again, it's not an issue that we've researched. It's not entirely clear what kind of savings there would be, but my guess is there'd be some.
Let's go to Ellen in Ellenville. Hello, Ellen in Ellenville.
Yes. Hi, gentlemen. We should all, as Americans, be in favor of equal justice under the law, and therefore it goes to say that it should be fair taxation under the law. Anybody from New York State who buys anything online, whether it be Amazon, eBay, or whoever, that company, if they wish to do business in New York State, should enforce the New York State tax sales tax law. This is not fair to anybody, and I have never, nor has anybody in my family ever, been in business for ourselves or had any connection with a business person or so forth. It's just plain sense, equal justice under the law. Anybody who buys anything in New York State, they live in New York State, they should pay the New York State sales tax. Now, this will prevent a lot of our downtown areas drying up and blowing away. These local merchants do contribute a great deal when the Girl Scouts and the Boy Scouts, et cetera, go around for donations for their penny socials or what have you. These merchants do contribute, and we need to keep them in our downtown areas. Otherwise, the whole downtown New York State will be in a wasteland. This online shopping has put out of business so many companies and businesses that it's only going to get worse. The legislature has the authority and the power, All they need is a stick up.
Okay, all right, very good. Yes,
stick up their backbone.
Thanks, Alan.
To enforce it.
Okay. Hey, listen, you should do a filibuster someday in Congress.
I have, and I've won many cases. So, gentlemen, get busy and stand up for equal taxation under the law.
All right,
well
Ellen in Ellenville, that was
very well said.
Very nice, huh? I think she's got a future or certainly a past. Let's go to Pat in Pittstown. Pat, you're on.
Yeah, I just wanted you talking about the taxes. One of the biggest people that got caught in the last couple of years ago was Sean Kerry. He bought a yacht, a multi-million dollar yacht. He kept it in Rhode Island so he wouldn't have to pay the sales tax in Massachusetts. And he got caught. Somebody gave him up.
Ah, it wasn't a swift boat, was it?
No, it was a little more than that.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Just checking. Well, thank you for that one, Pat. We appreciate the call.
This brings to mind New York has a sales tax break on yachts.
I
forget the details.
Oh, yeah, how much?
If John Kerry had bought that yacht in Long Island, maybe he wouldn't have, he would have.
What do you think, boys? You want to go in on a yacht?
Yeah. I think I'll start with a kayak.
I got about $250 on me. Let's go to Kathleen in Greenwich, Connecticut, or Greenwich, New York? Where are you calling from?
Hello?
Kathleen? We've lulled yet another listener to sleep. Kathleen, going once.
No.
Oh, maybe you have a bad connection. Could you maybe turn around with yourself?
I might be in a bad area.
Oh, there you are. Hello.
Oh, you can hear me.
Yes.
Okay, well, I was calling regarding the price of college textbooks. They have the kids, I say kids, mostly kids go to college. They have the kids by the latest edition every year. So, I mean, it's a big giveaway to the textbook companies, the companies producing these textbooks. What my daughter did, she didn't go to a New York State school. She went to a private school out in Connecticut. It was really expensive, but she was a financial aid student. And she used the library. The library had copies of all the books. Now, the library didn't have enough copies for everybody. But, at our state schools, our libraries could have all the books the kids need in the library, and they wouldn't have to buy them.
Okay. Yeah. Guys,
mention? Instead of having six copies of the book, they could have 80 copies.
No, I get
and
it.
And then...
The thing is, the state is buying. If it's a state school, then the state is buying all those textbooks.
But Abby, look.
I have a library.
All right, we're losing you. We're losing you, Kathleen. But thank you for that.
The textbooks are ridiculously expensive, and to some extent, it's a racket. And so there are ways you can deal with it. A lot of books now, of course, they don't have to come as a paper document. They could come as an open sourced electronic version of a textbook. Why not do that kind of? Why not help save people money? And instead of viewing textbooks as a way to make money, they should be looking at it as a way to make it easier for students to learn.
Does the state, do the schools get a little money back on each book sold?
Sometimes they're sold through a school-owned bookstore, so I suppose they make some money there.
Hmm.
And then I know with my kids, when they were done with their books, they could go to the bookstore and sell them back. And then
steep discount.
Yeah, and then where do they go?
But then the next year, somebody could buy their book used and save some money. So,
unless, of course, like the caller said, they're going with the most recent version of the textbook, which has very little difference, and then charging everyone more for it.
All right, only about a minute left. Bill Hammond, does the deal get done? Does the budget get done by Friday night at midnight?
No, I expect it'll go a little past midnight, but it'll be essentially done.
Yeah, Blair Horner.
I think that's right. I think it'll be within a few hours of midnight with most of the budget being done in advance.
They'll be up until the dawn on Saturday voting.
Blair Horner, you're a noted complainer. What will you be complaining about when the new budget is done?
I'll be complaining about the secrecy surrounding it.
It's been every year.
It doesn't matter. It's still terrible, right? It's the people's money. The people should know what's going on.
And the lack of ethics reform.
Yeah, right.
Bill Hammond, the Empire Center. How do we find that on the web?
EmpireCenter.org.
All right. And Blair Horner, you and the NYPIRG kids, where can we find you on?
NYPIRG.org.
Haven't seen them in the neighborhood lately.
NYPIRG. They're coming.
They are?
Yeah.
What are they going to ask me about this time?
They're going to ask you about what you think about Blair on the radio.
They stay away from my house now because I invite them for a long conversation. They say, God, get away from this guy. All right, thanks, guys, for being here. We appreciate it. Support comes from Vision XL Eye Care, Lake Katrine Exams, Eye Care, Dry Eye Therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionXLEyeCare.com. Kent Hicks Construction, specializing in deep energy retrofits, passive house, zero energy homes, and historic restorations, serving Western Massachusetts for over 25 years. KentHicksConstruction.com. Gazebo, Northampton, Massachusetts, an independent lingerie shop specializing in bra and post-mastectomy fittings, providing support to the Pioneer Valley for almost 40 years. The-Gazebo.com. And the Whistling Kettle of Ballston Spa and Troy, introducing purple tea for energy, antioxidants, and mental focus, available in-store or online, thewhistlingkettle.com. Get me some mental focus for the new year. Hey, thanks again to Blair Horner and Bill Hammond for being here. It was a fun show. Thanks to everybody who called in, and thank you for listening. Thanks to Zach Malloy for staying awake for today's program. Nicely done, Zach. Your phones were answered by Susie Chekai. Our producer is Jim Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, get out your quills and pens and typewriters. Oh, it's the Writers Forum. I shan't be able to sleep tonight.